What is up, family culture hackers? Welcome to the movement to revolutionize your family culture, a movement to shift away from the norms and values established in a society saddled in all the negative, destructive patterns that we seem to perpetuate for some reason. These prevailing and pervasive beliefs are everywhere, and most of us know about it, but we don't really know what to do about it. If you are dying to make a change in your life somehow, but you are feeling stuck, it is not your fault. These dominant belief systems often live just beneath the surface of our consciousness, and you live out your day-to-day reacting to these beliefs. They have been passed on to you by society and our family. Family culture hacking is all about learning how to recognize these dysfunctional belief systems and stopping them in their tracks. You will begin to see them lurking everywhere in your thoughts and language, in media, music, and marketing, in education, in business and government, in politics, and in your daily habits. Every week, I will be interviewing authors and experts who have spotted dysfunctional patterns in the dominant culture. We'll unpack these beliefs and behaviors for you to analyze why we tend to repeat them, even though we know they are not okay. Then we'll discuss solutions and behaviors to replace the dysfunctional ones so you can start practicing them. The goal of being a family culture hacker is to learn how to envision something better for you and your family, your community, and the world, and start playing out a different role and writing a new script for yourself and your family. Welcome to the show. Hello, family culture hackers. I want to welcome to this show today, Whitney Bean. Whitney is a wellness and life coach and a mom of four, and she loves digging into messy, stressful, and dramatic areas in her clients' lives so that she can help them to organize, evaluate, and find balance from the inside out. Welcome, Whitney. Super, super excited to have you on the show.
Hi, Jody. I'm excited too.
So I like to change up the way that I do my introduction to my guests. And tell me who did you want to be, or what did you want to do when you were a kid as you were growing up? What did you think you would become as an adult?
I have two things, and they're very cliche. The first one is I wanted more than anything to be a mom. I had this beautiful little doll. Her name was Rachel, and I literally would pray every night that she would come to life. And so that was something that ever since I was really little, I wanted to nurture. I wanted to, you know, have kids of my own. And then the other one was I wanted to be an illustrator for Disney. My dad was an artist, and I loved Disney. I loved the creation and the magical part of it. And so when I watched at the end of VHSs, they would show how they draw the characters, like Winnie the Pooh. And I just thought that was so cool, the way that they sketched them. And so that's my other dream.
Nice, nice. So how did those things, wanting to become a mom and a Disney sketch artist, how did that shape who you did become?
Well, even now I tell my kids all the time, like, man, I wanted to be a mom so bad. And, you know, I think it's important for our kids to know that it's important that they know it. That was part of my life for a long time before I even had them. And I prepared for being a mom a long time before they came. And then the creativity and the sketch definitely comes into play. We do a ton of art around this house. There's construction paper and tape on just about every floor at all times. Nice. So those both definitely come into play.
That's so cool. I love that. I love that. I love hearing what people say what they wanted to become, because I think it's so fascinating how we dream these dreams, and how much it becomes infused into our personalities as we grow up and begin to realize our dreams unfolding before us.
Yeah.
So that's really cool. So tell me about what was a pivotal experience in your life that got you into becoming a wellness and life coach?
Yeah. So I actually had like some major health issues. You know, it's not really the story that anybody wants to hear. It's not that exciting or fun, but it was so eye-opening to me. I was in my late 20s. I had two kids at the time. They were pretty young, like 1 and 3. And I just began to have some really surprising and mysterious health issues. And so I, you know, started going to doctors and just kind of followed what I thought I should do, you know, like go see this doctor, and this doctor would give me 3 recommendations. So I would go see those 3 doctors. And so pretty soon my schedule was really full. I had pretty much a full-time job of going to appointments and getting testing done to see what was going on without any tangible results. You know, there was nothing that said point blank, this is what's going on, which is great, but it also is extremely discouraging.
Yeah. Yeah.
And at the same time, of course, I had those two kids, right? So I was trying to balance like being a pretty new mom with also trying to figure out how to be myself with feeling so awful. Mm-hmm. So after a couple of years of that, I had a friend who, she recommended a couple of, things that I was not familiar with. So essential oils and working with a practitioner that did meridian testing. Okay. And both of those things were so far from what I had considered in the past. And there was a lot of judgment on my part for sure. Like I was scared to tell people that's what I was doing. I was nervous what it would be like, but I was so desperate that my husband and I both decided like, we just have to jump in and try whatever we can. And so I had a meeting with that practitioner and I told her all of my symptoms, all of the things I thought I had, like, oh, Google says this. And she just said, you know, Whitney, it really doesn't matter what you have. You are out of balance. And if we can get your body in balance, then your body will heal itself. And that was my wow. biggest turning point. That was, you know, I just had chills all over me and I wanted to believe that so badly. It felt so hopeful and it felt like something that I wanted to carry. I wanted to carry that message forward, not the message of like, what do I have? What do I have? But how do I balance my body? And, and so that has been my journey for the last 6 years is in all these different ways, all these different avenues, how can I balance my life, my home and my body?
Wow. That's a great story. Are you kidding me? That's not boring, right? First of all, when you said that, you're like, nobody wants to hear this side of the story. It's never very sexy or beautiful or whatever. When we have to describe our trials, right? But at the yeah. same time, every time I hear people's experience, I'm like, no, but you went through it. So anytime yeah. you talk to somebody who's going through stuff, you know what they're going through. You know, I just right. think that sometimes people who haven't experienced it, I mean, look at all of the traditional medicine doctors that you went to that yeah. they had no idea because they never really experienced
yeah.
some of the things that you were dealing with or most of them.
And honestly, you know, I didn't know what I was getting into either, you know, like they did their job perfectly. And so there was nothing right. wrong on that part, right? It was just a matter of me not knowing where else to look. And so I kept coming to them and saying, but what else? Right.
Right.
But they're like, we've pretty much done everything. So, you know, it was just a matter of not knowing on my part where else I could open my eyes, where else I could see some hope, something that could help out.
That's so interesting. I mean, I've heard so many stories like that where conventional medicine just didn't have all the answers. And mm-hmm. so you got to look for those solutions outside of conventional medicine. And that could be a whole other topic about dominant yes. culture is believe, you know, our belief in conventional medicine and how sometimes that can be very limiting. And, mm-hmm. and so if you don't open your mind to the possibilities of unconventional medicine or holistic medicine or different approaches to it, then you're really shutting off opportunities to live a fuller life.
Yeah.
So that sounds really amazing that you're able to find that. I love what this practitioner is saying about balance and not mm-hmm. necessarily having a label to what you're experiencing, because sometimes labels can create more stigma or barriers to our growth and health that it's just, that's unfair too, you know, that,
yeah.
that to limit ourselves to those labels can be really frustrating as well. So,
yeah.
okay. So that's really cool. I think we could go on a whole subject around this whole idea of balance, but
take it wherever you want. I'll
okay. No, this is good. Okay. Well, this whole idea of family culture and helping families to recognize the ingrained beliefs that we carry with us that keep us stuck, you know, ingrained means, right? We're not stuck. We're not in a groove. We're in a rut, right? Mm-hmm. And a lot of families are stuck in a rut thinking, what is this? It is this all, there's no handbook of instructions. There's no, like, how do we figure out how to raise our kids to be successful? And how do I establish balance and peace and growth in my own life mm-hmm. and feeling like, well, I'm just supposed to do whatever my parents did or whatever it seems like everybody is doing. And, the theme of this season is really about like, that there's the, have you read a James Clear book, the Atomic Habits?
Yes. Yeah.
The first episode of this season is about how those he describes three aspects of our culture that influence us. And he says, it's the close, it's the many and the powerful. I want to focus on the close. You know, okay, what can we do in our families to almost redefine what the many is telling us? Because mm-hmm. sometimes the many is wrong most of the time. Right. And so, when you think about this idea of the dominant culture or the many that are influencing our families, what is one dysfunctional belief or behavior of that dominant culture that you want to see shift or change towards a more healthy and functional approach?
Mm-hmm. Well, I have a couple. My first one is, you know, I think that one of the best things we can do in our home is to encourage yourself and each member of their family to be themselves. When you're, you know, encouraging each person to bring to the table all those beautiful things that they have, all those amazing gifts, all those like passions and the enthusiasm, you know, the things that we're all passionate for, you know, we have quite the bundle. We have so many things that we can work with. And then, you know, around that also building a structure so that we're still kind to each other, right? Because like being yourself doesn't mean you get to say whatever you want to the person next to you, right? So, you know, be yourself and be kind and be a good communicator. And so I think, you know, when we allow each member of the family to be themselves, and it's going to look probably different than you, you're going to see some things in common. You're going to, you know, in my kids, I totally see things like, oh, I remember experiencing that. And then I think to myself, how would I have liked to have been talked to?
Yeah.
You know, when I was experiencing that, right? Like what space did I need? What cuddles did I need? You know, what is it that I would have needed and what do they need in order to create a more fluid and powerful response for that. Yeah. And so that's the big one that stands out. And then the other one is about emotions. You know, teaching your kids very young that emotions are totally normal and there's something that your body experiences, but it doesn't define them. So, you know, if you have a kid who's sad, you know, teaching them that they're, allow them to like create that space. Like, so when you feel sad, what does that feel like in your body? Right. Mm-hmm. So that they know that they're experiencing that sadness. They're not a sad kid. Right. And that could go with anything. Like, you know, you're not a jealous kid. You're not all these things. You're experiencing that. And we all experience all of those things. And this is how I experience it. So yeah, those are the two main ones, you know, be yourself. And then also that experience of allowing feelings and allowing kids to recognize what they feel like in their body.
Right. Right. So for the most part, I feel like those two go hand in hand, right? Like in a lot of ways, because if we're not allowing our kids to express their emotions, we're not allowing them to express their individuality and who they really are. And so, I just see, so what, okay, hold on. okay. So the behavior is often that we don't allow our kids to be authentic. Correct.
Right. Like, yeah. Like we have an expectation of what we want to see, right?
Yeah,
like we have an expectation of the things that we're interested in, the activities that we take part in, the way that we interact with other people. Those are our expectations.
Right.
And a lot of times, like we can have those structures where it's like, well, be kind for sure.
Right.
But we don't allow for the flexibility of how do you, you know, what are you enthusiastic about and that type of a thing.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's good to have at least a foundation of your values, like what you're saying, is being able to have the structure, but then allow kids freedom within the range of what those values are that allow them to express themselves. But you're right. I think that a lot of us as parents, sometimes a lot of times we have maybe like an expectation of what we want our kids' behavior to be like, or, you know, what we perceive as right and wrong behavior, good or bad kids or things like that sometimes we're like, just avoid. That's great. Her son is in the background waving at us. that's awesome. So it can be really hard to, as parents, to not get stuck in that, I think sometimes, because we have that expectation and we want to see our kids succeed. Right. And so if we start to see their bad behavior, quote unquote bad, then we get triggered and we're like, no,
yes,
that's a big no. And sometimes also I think parents, a lot of us, when our kids start to emote, right, when they have big feelings, we're like, what are you doing? This is just calm down, just stop crying or something, you know?
Like, this isn't that big of a deal. Like, we just want them to know, like, in the big picture, this means nothing.
Yeah.
But in the moment, it's the opposite. Like,
it's the biggest thing to them.
Yeah. Exactly. And they need to know what to do with that. They need to know this feels important. Now what?
Yeah.
Now what do I do with it?
Yeah.
Like, rather than like, well, if they're telling me it's not important and it feels important to me, then what do I do with it?
And basically you're sending the message to your child that they don't matter. If they think that matters and we're going, no, it doesn't matter. Then they're like, do I not matter?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And like, we want them, you know, to be themselves and to learn how to be intuitive and to respond to their own body and to their own senses. Yeah. You know, they have their own set of senses, right? They have those five senses, but then they also have that intuition.
Yeah.
They also have those gut feelings. And so if we're wanting to help them to, you know, create a trust system within themselves, but then we're telling them the opposite. You know, we want to make sure we're encouraging that system. And then asking ourselves, what can I do to help facilitate this, to help them through it rather than fighting against it?
Yeah. 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 So why do you think that we do this as parents? Like, why else, you know, we touched on saying we want them to succeed. So we try to push our expectations on them. And we don't know how to react to their emotions or give their feelings validity. But, you know, why, what happened inside of us that we're like, I have to control this or something. What do you think is going on?
I think a lot of it is fear based. You know, I think that we're scared, right? I think that we feel like if we're seeing a behavior that we've seen in ourselves or we've seen in other people that have turned into something that is scarier, I think it scares us, right? So if we see our kid being overly emotional, then we're like, oh great, they're going to be this overly emotional kid. They're going to get made fun of. Like, you know, I think that whatever experience that we have seen, either with ourselves or with the people around us, I think that we put that on, you know, we're assuming that that's what's going to happen. Or, and I don't think we're like conscious of this, right? Like, I don't think that we're like, oh, they don't like hot dogs, so like, you know, people are going to make fun of them because they're vegetarian. Or I don't think we're like conscious of it, but I think that that's in the background where we feel like we want them to, you know, be able to be themselves, but also like not have too extreme of reactions or too extreme of emotions.
Right. Right. So, but that's keeping them from even not having those extreme emotions almost sets them up for having extreme emotions.
Yes. Right. Exactly.
It's like you, I know every time that my daughter is throwing a tantrum and I'm just like, dude, you're six. You need to not be throwing tantrums anymore. You know?
Yeah.
But every time I'm like, please calm down. She screams even louder or something. And so I'm like, okay, we need to acknowledge her, get on her level and talk to her and meet her needs. And, you know, sometimes it feels like, okay, are we going to just spoil her and like reward this behavior if we're doing such and such things for her? But honestly, like whenever we get down on her level and just talk to her and be like, what's going on? What can we do for you?
Right.
Then she's able to calm down and
it's amazing.
Talk things through with us.
Yeah.
So it's a really powerful effect when, here's an idea, showing our kids love and attention, that the kind of attention that they need from loving parents, not necessarily like spoiling them or making them feel, I don't know. There's a right way to do it where it feels like they're seen and heard, right?
Yeah.
That's ultimately the goal.
Yeah. And I mean, what you're expressing too, is that's your balance, right? Like you realize the extremes and neither of those feel good. And so you've found a place in the middle, right? Like you are aware that you don't want to spoil. You're aware that you don't want to ignore. And so what's comfortable in the middle? And that goes exactly back to what we're talking about every member of the family being authentic and showing up as who they are, which is what you're doing, right? If you show up as you are, then you're better at listening to your intuition with how to help your kids, how to listen to them, how to respond to them. And it's going to be different with each kid. It's going to be different with every family.
Yeah, everybody has different needs.
So those tools, when it comes down to it, you know, like those tools, they're helpful, but it also is so helpful to listen to your own instincts.
Yeah.
And one other thing too, that I was thinking of when you were saying, you know, where does this come from? you know, we all have those triggers. We all have those things that really set us off. And I think that the triggers play a big part in how we parent as well. And we have started in our family to like say our triggers out loud. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we make them really silly and really funny so that it's not something that's like dark and scary. But, you know, like my husband, for example, if he puts a plate of food in front of the kids and they push it away, for whatever reason, that's a trigger for him, right? And so rather than being like, don't put your food away, you know, he just has communicated that, like, hey, for whatever reason, that just makes my insides go a little, you know, feel yucky. And so like, can you please, if you don't want the food, or, you know, if there's something we can do to help you, let's talk about it. But you always just keep your food in front of you, you know? So it's like this conversation that like, now they know how dad feels. Now they know how they can react, some other options. And then, you know, so we talk to the kids about like, what are your triggers? And it doesn't mean that they can get away with whatever. They also have to work on their triggers, just like we're working on our triggers.
Right, right.
You know, like, you know, if I am offended by something my kids are doing, I also have to work on why I'm having such a quick reaction to that. Mm-hmm. But I'm communicating it so that we can work at it from both ends.
Right.
Fear or something that's really scary to them, you know, that's a trigger. Let's talk about it. Let's put it on the table. So it's not something that we're like just squishing down and shaming.
Yeah. So that being able to state your triggers like that, do you feel like that allows your family to be able to recognize the feelings without necessarily placing blame on each other? You know, because I think that sometimes there are some parents, like I watched this one video recently or heard these different approaches to when we get triggered and we go, you did this thing. And then you're putting the responsibility on your child for your feelings.
Yes.
And it's like, but you're the adult and it's not, a child is not responsible for your feelings. So do you find that like being able to say your trigger and say, whoa, that's rubbing me the wrong way. What's happening? Yeah. Are you acknowledging your feelings without blaming the other person?
Yes.
Do you see 100%. That going
on? Yeah, 100%. Yeah. The whole point of pointing out a trigger is that we're acknowledging that for whatever reason, it's having a big reaction in my body, right? We're pointing that out because of that, you know, we get to work on it from both sides. So yeah, it's not like, you know, and it's never like you're making me feel this way, but it's like, when you do that thing, I have this response and I'll work on my side. But in the meantime, what else could we do? Like what other thing could you do that was a little bit different or, you know, that kind of a thing. So, you know, and like when you start to look at triggers, you'll notice them more and more in your home. And they're so funny. Like other people's triggers are hilarious. It's like, why would that bug you? That does not bug me at all. Uh-huh. But I have triggers and my triggers I know look crazy to everyone else. Right. So the whole point of pointing those out is to allow space and compassion for something that you might not understand. And so I think when kids see that, then they feel like, well, then I can talk about mine. And like I said, sometimes we make it a conversation. We'll be like, well, what are some of dad's triggers? And what are some, you know, we make it silly, right? Like we'll kind of talk about the weird ones and the funny ones. And then, you know, just to make it a communication between all of us that is going. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's a really powerful skill to teach our children. I had this conversation with my kids recently because they will start to bicker and then they start to escalate it to fighting. And then the next thing you know, somebody's crying. And so I had to sit them down and be like, look, when something is going on, you need to point it out and call it out right away.
Yeah.
Okay. And don't escalate it. You got to start de-escalating the situation, right? Like instead of making it worse. And so I'm like, you got to call it out, name the frustration, name the pain that you're feeling, like that is not okay. Because the more that behavior persists, the more you're going to get hurt. And I just wanted them to know that they need to be able to name what's happening, because they're going to get out in the world, be surrounded by friends or become teenagers and surrounded by peers that are pressuring them. And if they can't recognize and name what's bothering them, that's a red flag, right? Like, or if they see behaviors that are red flags, they need to be able to call it out, be like, that's a red flag. I don't, you know, that's not a good behavior to have, or that makes me feel uncomfortable, and be able to switch the situation and set a clearer boundary. You know, yeah. that's really been something that we've been talking about in our family. So it's great that you're talking about this idea of telling each other, this is my trigger. When you did that behavior, I feel this. And yeah. that's a really great way to, rather than escalating the situation and where your husband could have been like, I hate when you push the food away from the table. Yeah. I'm so angry right now. Or, you know, it just yeah. turns into like this could have become like a disciplinary situation instead of a teaching experience
right.
where it's like, no, you're going to sit there and you're going to eat this food. You know, it could become, I could see, you know, that it could become that way if they didn't have the skills to communicate, hey, this is what I'm feeling. And made me feel uncomfortable, or I didn't like that. Let's find a different way. Let's set a different boundary. Yeah. So that we can all feel better in
yeah.
the end.
I love that. Yeah. And I think like teaching kids communication skills when they're young is so powerful. Like when I overhear, so my kids are 1, 4, 8, and 10. So, you know, when they're playing together, they are already communicating, that you can hear the vocabulary. Like it just makes my heart sing. It is so cool. But you can hear the way that they are resolving things, right? Because they're totally going to have times when they disagree. They're going to have times when they want the same toy, you know, but they are communicating and they're practicing. And then they know that once they try, and if it doesn't work, then they can ask for help. You know, I always want them to know that, like, if they need more ideas, or if they need a little bit of help, or if they need to set a boundary, if they need to take a break, all of those things are available and they can do those things. But yeah, like, yeah. you know, when we, and I like what you're saying too, like when you are in a situation that feels uncomfortable, when you express what you're experiencing, it totally helps the situation yeah. as opposed to like, that's my toy, you know, saying like, yeah, I feel sad when you take my toy. It's a totally different conversation. Yeah. Right. And then it's not, we're not elevating and escalating
yeah.
and, you know, yelling back and forth, but it's just like a conversation like, hey, that hurts my feelings when you take my toy, and then we can figure it out.
Yeah. Yeah. That's so, it's so powerful. I mean, I know a lot of, or I don't know, but I see or observe behaviors or talking to people that is their default, is they cope with that trigger by getting angry or feeling like they had to blame somebody else for what happened inside of themselves. And so I think, so is this like one of your systems then of that you described earlier, that you create systems? So what's another system that you can share with us? You know, so you talked about sharing your triggers and having conversations about it. What's another system that we can implement that helps our children be more authentic and express themselves better?
Yeah. So I have a couple of things that came up. So one of them is, as a parent, knowing that you don't have to always deal with things in the moment, you know, like sometimes when, we observe things that are going on with our kid that might feel like, that's something we need to deal with, we want to just jump up in it without thinking about the big picture and what might be a good way to do that. You know, so let's say we've seen a specific behavior a few times and you're like, okay, it's kind of becoming a thing. So instead of jumping in and having that feel again, like a trigger, or feeling like you want to jump in and make something change right then, taking that to a family meeting. And that is the next thing that I was going to talk about, is having family meetings. So, you know, once a week, sitting down with your families and going over a few things, you know, something that we do, we go over like, what does our week look like? Are there any specific meals that we want to add in? Do we want to do a service this week? You know, what physical activity are we going to do together? So we go over a few things, and then we also talk about like what's working, what's not working, or what's not working, what do we want to see different? And so we do a family meeting, and then we do an individual meeting with each kid. And that's completely based on their age, right? It can be really, really simple, but it helps them to just sit down with mom and dad, like have that one-on-one time, and then be able to like look forward. Like, right. So we're in the moment right now. Here's the week coming. You know, what are we working towards? And so when there's things that pop up, then I might bring it to that family meeting, and then we'll talk about it there. not when their emotions are huge and high, but just in a safe space when we all are like feeling calm and we're like, okay, so looking forward in this next week, if that same situation happens again, what do you do? And like, that's so empowering to kids to be able to have a plan as opposed to like, how did you not see that was going to happen? Or how did you not see that this could have been an option before, but now you're all in a place of like, okay, so looking forward, you know, what could we do differently?
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. I love that. I love hearing the different ways that people do their family meetings. That's so cool. I love that you talked about having the goals and being able to plan out the week, and then also being able to talk about those things that come up.
Yeah.
Because when you're right. If you talk about it in the moment, emotions are high and it can feel like somebody's getting attacked. Right. Yeah. And then that can be stifling to who they want to be, or feel like you're judging them and things like that. And judgment is definitely one of those things that deteriorates trust. And so if you wait until the right time to talk about it, then you're just talking about the behavior, not the child. You know what I mean? Like you're not saying like, you're bad. You're saying, let's work on this behavior. You know, I noticed that this happened. And so let's talk about it. And then I also love that that allows you to set up, what are the consequences? So, both a role play, having a plan, but also what are the consequences of that behavior? Whereas, you know, if it happens in the moment and then you lay down a consequence and they're going, what just happened? Oh my gosh, mom hates me because of, and now I'm being punished. Yeah. So that makes a lot of sense to be able to shift that to having it as a conversation rather than feeding into that trigger and it becoming an escalated issue.
So, and that's where that intuition comes into play too, because of course there's some behaviors that like that needs to stop, right? Like if they're harming someone else, sure. You know what I mean? But looking at it and saying, okay, is this something that we could like take into a different conversation? You know? So that's where that intuition comes into play too. Allowing them the space to kind of see how that ends up, or do you need to jump in because it is harming someone else or something like that?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's so cool. Whitney, I've really enjoyed having this conversation, and I love hearing about your systems and hearing about your ideas of how we could support our kids to be more authentic and, you know, develop their character, learn about their emotions so that they're not, you know, we don't make them feel ashamed of any of their emotions, right? We want to be able to acknowledge them. Tell us more about where we can connect with you.
Sure. Yeah. So I should say too, I love to coach moms who are feeling overwhelmed or feeling stressed or feeling fatigued, you know, all of those things in their body that they're feeling are just weighing them down. That's where I love to come in. Like you said at the beginning, that messy stuff that people are just like embarrassed and just feeling like run down with. That's the kind of stuff that I love, because when you come forward and want to help that, you're being intentional. And when you have intention, you can do amazing things. So, you can find me on whitneybean.com. You can listen. I have a podcast. It's called A Tad Bit Crunchy. And you can find me on Instagram at A Tad Bit Crunchy.
Cool. Cool. And what's coming up next for you? What is the next big goal for you?
Yeah. So, business wise, so I have, an offer too for restoring balance is what it's called. And it's just a simple way to individually look at how to restore that balance. Like, how do we get back to that authentic person and let that other stuff kind of disintegrate, right? Those big triggers, those big feelings, all of those things, if we're intentional and we come to the table, how do we let those kind of disintegrate? So I have that. And then I have a 12-week reboot as well, where I have one-on-one coaching every week for 12 weeks.
Awesome. Very cool. I wanted to bring up also that I have my family leadership toolbox where I have free resources provided by my guests. And you had mentioned that you have this chronic symptoms freebie that I can add to the toolbox. Will you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. So I think that, you know, you're talking about culture overall. I think that our culture is very good at ignoring symptoms. I think we're really good at feeling like this is the norm. This is my normal. This is how I'm going to feel all the time. Or my mom always had headaches. And so now I'm starting to have headaches, you know, that kind of a thing that we just feel like is part of who we are. But in reality, every symptom and everything that we're experiencing is information. Mm-hmm. And so, with that freebie, it allows you to look at and say, to say, this is what I am experiencing, and then being able to get to a place where you're listening to what's going on so that your symptoms can get quieter. So you're not having such extreme symptoms.
Yeah.
And getting to a place where your body and your brain and your heart and your soul feel more like yourself and healthier.
Wow. I look forward to sharing that with my audience. Thank you so much for that gift. And yeah. I really appreciate you coming on the show, and I appreciate what you're doing for serving families, helping them to be more intentional about their family culture. Thanks, Whitney.
Yeah, likewise. You're awesome.
Thank you, Family Culture Hacker, for tuning in to the Family Culture Movement. I have so much fun creating these shows and having these discussions because I know that it is what is going to help us shift our vision towards a family culture of intentionality, trust, sufficiency, and growth. Thank you for being part of this movement. Help more people be part of this movement and find this podcast by liking and sharing and rating and reviewing the podcast and going on social media and finding me there. You can connect with me at Family Culture Podcast on Facebook and Instagram and at Jody Chafee everywhere on all social media platforms. Thank you again for being here. And remember that if you want to change the world, go home and love your families.